are many ways to say thank you. We can say thank you in hundreds of languages. Write notes and send them to our loved ones. Or get more creative than that. We even have an entire holiday devoted to saying thanks. But this Thanksgiving, how can we make gratitude more than just a day? And what does the Bible have to say about being grateful?
Good morning again. It's good to see all of you. Today I wanted to start out and I wanted to tell you about one of the first guys that really reached out to me when I first started this church. His name was Paul Vartanesian. And many of you knew him. I just got to do his funeral about a month ago. And Paul was just this incredible person. He was 92 years old. He sat over here in the back. And when I was asked to do his funeral, I was trying my best to find the words to sum up the life that this guy lived. And even as I talked to his family, I learned more and more. He always talked about being from Pennsylvania, Williamsport, Pennsylvania. He always had a Pittsburgh Steelers hat on. And he would use that to get into conversations with you. And one of the things I found out later on was that back in like the 40s, he had been on a baseball team out of Williamsport, Pennsylvania, that won a title that was essentially a precursor to the Little League World Series, which is played in Williamsport, Pennsylvania every year. Did you guys know that? This man traveled the world. His background was unbelievable. Everyone was from a different part of the world. He still spoke Italian. Even as he was older, he could speak Italian. He was Armenian by heritage. He fought in Vietnam and in other places, traveled the world. His wife was full-blooded German. He had so many amazing stories. And then, right as I thought I knew everything about him, someone shared to me, he used to sing in the Easter plays. This man was just unbelievable. And no matter if you ever tried to go meet with him, he always wanted to go to like Sonny's, but he always got a hot dog. It wasn't even on the menu. They knew his order was a hot dog. He was just an unbelievable guy. And when I tried to sum him up, the only thing that I could think that really told people who he was his gratitude. In fact, part of my wanting to do this series on gratitude came from him. He could talk to you about anything, especially anything Pennsylvania related, but if you stayed for more than 3, 4, or 5 minutes, he was going to tell you how much God had blessed him, how grateful he was for his family, how much he loved his church, how good everyone had been to him, and it was so sincere and so deep, he would almost tear up as he told you. And I don't think that was just me. I think that was absolutely everyone. He was the most sincerely grateful person I think I have ever met in my life. And when I tried to sum him up, that was the best thing I could think to say. And so, I didn't have a chance to do this before the funeral because I couldn't find it. But a couple of years ago, we did an interview with him where I tried to capture a little bit of who he was for a series on testimonies. And we'd gone to his house, Jacob and I, and put the camera up and put it together, and I could not find the video for the life of me before the funeral. But our music minister, Kevin, is a much better record keeper than I am. And we found the video. And I wanted to, in light of this series on Thanksgiving, I made a little 2-minute cut out of that. And I would like you guys to watch this video, and hopefully you'll get a sense of what I'm talking about with his sincere sense of gratitude. So if you would, I'd like to play that first.
We us Americans have it so nice. We don't really know what the bad times, really bad times, are like. Growing up, I heard so much mainly my father, what my parents had to go through, my mother's father was decapitated just because he was an Armenian. We can't imagine this because we don't have that in our society like that. Thank God my dad came to this country, because it never would have happened otherwise. If I had been active in church over in Armenia, I would have been in the Orthodox, and that would be my choice, of course, today, knowing what I know about the Bible. I'm just so thankful for Dad's move. From the time we came here, the people were just so good to us. That may not mean anything to you. You're raised that way. So you don't know what the other side is really like. And I do, and Heidi did too. And we really appreciated the way people took us in. I'm so thankful for my church family here. If it wasn't for my immediate family and the friend that I have, I could not have made it in losing my wife, because we were so attached, we were like glue. The only time we were separated was the year in Vietnam and 6 months that I had to go on an island in the South Pacific. I still have so many friends at church. I rely on just a lot of things that they say. If it's just coming up and hugging me, shaking my hand, and always having something nice to say, you can't beat that. I love it. I hope it stays that way to the day I'm done. I'm thankful to the church and the people.
You notice how many times he said, "I'm thankful"? This was his spirit, it's who he was, and it always blew me away. And when I went to preach on it, I had to, pick a Bible passage, and the one that came to mind is the one I want to start with today. We'll go a little deeper than I did then, but it's the story, it's out of Luke chapter 18. It's a fantastic story. I'm sorry, it's 17, back in 17. In Luke chapter 17, there's this curious story that really talks about Thanksgiving in a profound way. Let's see, Luke 17 and verse 11. "Now on his way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. And as he was going into a village, 10 men who had leprosy met him. They stood at a distance and called out in a loud voice, 'Jesus, Master, have pity on us.' When he saw them, he said, 'Go, show yourselves to the priests.' And as they went, they were cleansed." So we got 10 people with leprosy living, by the way, in Samaria, which is where he had to go to get to where he needed to go. And all 10 of them are healed as they're walking back to the priest because of what Jesus did. Verse 15. "One of them, when he saw he was healed, came back praising God in a loud voice. He threw himself at Jesus' feet and what's that word? Thanked him." And I love the little side note that the author gives us. "And he was a Samaritan." As if you shouldn't have expected that. Notice how praising God and being grateful go hand in hand in this story. Verse 17, Jesus asked, "Were not all 10 cleansed? Where are the other 9? Has no one returned to give praise to God again, except this foreigner?" Then he said to him, "Rise and go, your faith has made you well." In this story, we see a few things. One, gratitude is connected to glorifying God. It is because he was grateful that he came back and said thank you to Christ. And Jesus said that that was a praise to God. When you're grateful, you praise God for what you have. And I think the second thing we see is that gratitude is a rare quality. I don't know if you can put a percentage on it, but at least in this story you can. Out of 10, how many came back? 1. It's a rare quality. I don't know many people who are truly, from their souls, grateful. And I think one other point that I want to make from it is the people who are grateful are nobodies. I say that politely, I really do. But first of all, leprosy in their society, you know how unpleasant that was, right? It meant that you couldn't be in society. You had to be pushed out in colonies outside of the city and could not come into contact with other people because you were not fit to be near. It's a lonely life. Some accounts even say that as anyone came near you, you had to cry out, unclean, unclean, because they didn't want to become ceremonially unclean when they were near you. Lonely life. On top of that, this man is a Samaritan, meaning he's already rejected by the Jews. He's already a half-breed. He's not well-liked. This is the lowest of the low. And the lowest of the low, the nobodies in the world, that man comes back and says, thank you. What I'm getting at is I think gratitude is tied to humility in a way we don't often acknowledge. Gratitude and humility shake hands and create in people a contrite and beautiful spirit. That is, I think, at least partly what made Paul so special to me. And I want to take that story of the nobody who had the audacity to go back to Christ and say thank you. And I want to compare it to a different story. And I didn't do this in the funeral. This is new, but it adds a layer that I think really matters. And it's only one chapter later. Just flip over to Luke chapter 18 in your Bibles. And I want you to see this story. You may have heard this story as well, but I don't know if you've ever read it side by side to the other one. To some who were confident in their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else. I love when the Bible tells you exactly who Jesus is talking to and why. It really lets you understand what he's trying to get at right up front. To the some who were confident in their own righteousness and looked down on everyone else, to those people, to that audience, Jesus told this parable. In a parable, there's always something absurd. It's a story of everyday life that has some meaning and truth to it. And he tells it this way, verse 10, two men went up to the temple to pray, that is to worship God, to pray in the temple and give their heart and soul to Him. One was a Pharisee. These were the religious elite of their days, the ones that did all these things to be right in the eyes of God. And the other one was, what? A tax collector. And tax collectors are about as well-liked as IRS agents might be today. Actually, way worse, believe it or not, because they were fellow Jews taking money from fellow Jews for an foreign empire that had conquered them. They were not only taking your money, they were traitors in the process. And they weren't given profits, like they weren't given a paycheck. Their paycheck came from overcharging you. Sorry. Tax collectors were not liked. They were certainly the lowest of the low in terms of how people perceived them, although they may have lived more richly. So with these two very different men praying in the temple, verse 11, the Pharisee stood by himself and prayed, God, and what magic word does he use? I thank you. I'm so grateful, God, for all that you've done for me, except that's not what he says. God, I thank you that I am not like other people. Robbers, evildoers, adulterers, or even, you know, like this tax collector over here. I have to wonder if he was like within earshot, like did he even care? I fast twice a week and give a tenth of all that I get. Verse 13, but the tax collector stood at a distance. He would not even look up to heaven. He beat his breast and said, God, have mercy on me, a sinner. And Jesus gives the surprising, shocking part of this parable. He says, I tell you that this man, rather than the other, went home justified before God. For all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. See, I find it funny that the Bible not only recognizes sincere gratitude, but also calls out insincere gratitude. Because the Pharisee, he used the word thank you, but it wasn't really thanking God. He was really thanking himself for how special and unique he was. He was really praying to himself and not to God. That's the problem with it. And this insincere gratitude gets called out and cut down by Christ in this parable. And this is not an altogether unbelievable thing. This is a parable that felt like everyday life. And through it, Jesus brings out this truth. Because the other man, the tax collector, he did not use the word thank you, and yet he displayed it better than the others. Because he understood that he was broken. What's profound about this is the idea that gratitude and humility go hand in hand. That you cannot have one without the other. Grateful people are naturally humble because they realize what they have and enjoy it more. Humble people are naturally more grateful because they know they are nothing. So everything they have is a blessing. These two things, gratitude and humility, go hand in hand. And I think that that is key. And once we understand that, we see how gratitude becomes a basis for so many things that Jesus does throughout his life. Gratitude is not just in this one story or in two stories, but it's throughout so many things that Christ does. And once we understand that gratitude and humility tie together, we begin to see it. For instance, if you were to go back to Matthew chapter 6, in the Sermon on the Mount, chapter 6, we just did this on a Wednesday night, but we come across something called the Lord's Prayer. The Lord's Prayer is that beautiful prayer that you get that is supposed to be the model prayer to give us some idea of how we are to pray to God. Jesus tells people, this is how you shall pray. And then he goes on and he gives this beautiful prayer. And you've all probably heard it. If not in church, you've heard it in a sporting event. But it's very, very important. But I want to point out to you how it begins. And I want you to pay attention and see if gratitude and humility, hand in hand, aren't built into it. This then is how you should pray. This is Jesus speaking to the crowd. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Now, I asked my class what hallowed meant, and I did not get much of an answer. Hallowed is to say you are to be hallowed, you are to be glorified, you are to be honored. That's a great way to start a prayer. Why? Because you're acknowledging Him before you're acknowledging yourself. Instead of jumping into, and here's my list of demands, God, let me first acknowledge that I am nothing and you are everything. It puts you in maybe not a literal posture, but certainly in a posture of prayer. You start out, hallowed be your name. And then you follow that up with, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Which is to say, God, I want your will to be done, not my own. And that occurs before I ask you for anything. Before I ask you for a single thing, I want you to know that I care that your will be done before I care that my will be done. Because ultimately this is about you and not me. Because I understand who I am and I understand who you are. And so in that posture and in that attitude, I want you to know that I want your will done before my own. And then finally, from that place, he begins to ask. But he doesn't ask for everything under the sun. What does he ask for? Give us today our daily bread. Sustenance to survive. God, please allow that. By the way, I want to make a connection to you in case you hadn't thought about it. Last week, we were talking about the Israelites in the desert. And one of their grumbles, one of their complaints was that they didn't have what to eat. Well, food, yeah, food. And then Jesus provided that by bringing down what from heaven? Bread from heaven, which they called manna. Okay, so they grumbled over their literal daily bread. They were only supposed to gather enough for that day. Jesus is sort of referencing back that season of grumbling. There's a connection there between these things. Give us our daily bread, just like God provided for them their daily bread in the desert through miraculous means. God, provide for me what I need to get me through today, just as He did in the desert. And so there is a sense of humility in the way he approaches God in his prayer. And I think a sense of gratitude, because instead of asking for everything and anything, he asks for just enough to get by. And when you do that, when you come before God in that posture, gratitude is the natural result. Because you see God miraculously provide you with food from heaven every single day. That makes you grateful. If I, Christmas is coming up, and if I, you know, go out and I buy my son this really cool toy, and he opens it up on Christmas morning, he's only five. He might respond with, who knows what? He might say, oh, I wanted the other one. Or, you know, this is all, you know, are there more? Would you describe that as grateful? No. What are you as the parent going to do? I'm going to try not to do this, but what would you naturally do? You are the most ungrateful child I've ever met in my life. Any of you have said those words? Gratitude comes with realizing that you've gotten enough and being grateful for that. And so I think there's some connection there. Another one I think is a great example of Jesus utilizing this idea of gratitude and humility side by side. There's a story. There's a story where Jesus is at a Pharisee's house, and he's eating there. They're having this meal. They're having conversation. And, of course, Jesus is never comfortable in a Pharisee's house because they usually don't have great opinions about him. And I think he would probably agree that he has different opinions about them. Nonetheless, they're trying to play nice and have these conversations, and all this awkwardness is going on. And then the most awkward thing possible happens, and a woman barges in the middle of their meeting. And she, all of a sudden, I mean, she, first of all, she's a woman that the others in the room recognize. She's, as they say, a sinful woman. She's not lived the best life. And she comes, you know, just weeping, just throwing herself at Jesus' feet. And she has this alabaster jar full of perfume. Would have been worth a lot of money. I don't know if you remember that story. And she pours it out on Jesus' feet. It causes quite a hoopla. Quite a scene, if you know what I mean. And all the Pharisees are just sort of scoffing. And Jesus is just kind of there. And she's just kind of there, weeping at his feet. And it's all this strangeness and all this awkwardness. And then finally, one of the Pharisee that invited him there speaks up. And I think his name was Simon. And he's finally like, okay, I'm sorry, buddy, but if you were really this big prophet, you would know who's touching you. Remember that whole thing about clean and unclean, right? And then Jesus has some words. And when Jesus responds, you better be ready to hear it, right? So jump to Luke chapter 7. Again, we're back in Luke. Go figure. Luke chapter 7, verse 41. And he tells Simon these words. He gives him a parable. I'm sorry, the transition was a little slow. He gives him a parable to understand what happens in this moment. And he says to Simon, he says, two people owed money to a certain money lender. Okay, all right, we're getting a new story here. It's a parable. One owed him 500 denarii. Denarii is like a day's wages, right? So not quite 2 years, but a pretty significant period of time. And the other owed him 50 denarii, so, you know, a couple of months. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he, the moneylender, forgave the debts of both. And then he asked Simon a very pointed question. He says, now which one of them will love him more? Well, Simon answers back the only way he can. Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt forgiven. And Jesus is like, you have judged correctly, Jesus said. But then he keeps going and he makes his point. Then he turned toward the woman, the one who was, you know, at his feet. And he said to Simon, do you see this woman? I came into your house. You did not give me any water for my feet. traditional hospitality to wash his feet, but she wet my feet with her tears and wiped them with her hair. You did not give me a kiss, but this woman from the time I entered has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not put oil on my head, traditional, you know, hospitality here, but she has poured perfume on my feet. Therefore I tell you, her many sins have been forgiven as her great love has shown. But whoever has been forgiven little loves little. In other words, gratitude is now tied to humility, which is tied to love. It is because we are acknowledging our own huge debt to God that we are able to acknowledge and be grateful for forgiving us so much, which then allows us to love and worship Christ and to love other people. All these things run together. It is gratitude as a response to the gift of salvation that causes us to be able to live wholeheartedly, to love and worship God with everything within us. And it is a beautiful thing to be small before God. We forget that. But the more we understand our own smallness, that we have been forgiven so much, the more we are able to properly worship God. I truly believe the Christian life is a reaction of gratitude to the gift of salvation. It is because we have been saved that we live a better life. We don't live a better life in order to be saved. We are saved by the grace of God, and it causes us to live differently because we understand our smallness and appreciate it at depth. And I think that that's what this woman got right and what the Pharisee never understood. There's a very similar story, and I'm just going to narrate it. I won't make you turn there, but there's a very similar story in which Jesus tells a parable about a servant who was managing his master's money, and somehow or another, it's not explained, he manages to lose a laughably huge amount of money. Like, I mean, it's an absurd amount of money. Like the kind of money he wouldn't be able to pay back in 10 lifetimes. And the master, knowing that this guy has no chance whatsoever to ever pay it back, takes pity on him and forgives the debt. And then what happens? Well, this servant who got forgiven this huge amount of debt goes out and finds a guy who owes him like a couple hundred bucks, chokes him, throws him on the ground, and then puts him in prison over a few hundred bucks. And again, every parable has a ridiculous, absurd moment. And Jesus is pointing out to them the absurdity of a forgiven servant not forgiving others. You would think he would be grateful for how much he had been forgiven, and yet he had the audacity to go out and be angry at someone else. Because he did not understand how much he'd been forgiven, he did not have the humility to act in accordance with the grace he'd received. And once again, gratitude and humility go hand in hand. When you understand how great your debt is before God, you are naturally humbled and you appreciate all that He gives you. Gratitude and humility working together. It changes everything. You need gratitude and humility to love others. You need gratitude and humility to worship God properly. You need gratitude and humility to be able to forgive others who have wronged you. How in the world could you ever do that if you did not realize your own smallness in things? You have to literally bring yourself lower to understand and forgive another person. You have to have gratitude and humility to be a follower of Christ. It's the only way. It's the spirit with which we are all supposed to have. So I think that Jesus ties these things together throughout his life and his parables, and I hope this brief survey pulls that together for you. But I also want to talk a little bit about my own experiences. because this idea of gratitude and humility are hard to find, and they are rare, even in our own day. And I'll give you this small experience of mine. Some of you know that Jen and I got married. We were 30, basically. We were out of school and everything. And there was a period of time in my life where I did not know if I was going to get married. Did you ever have that same feeling? I was wanting you to say, no, I had all the confidence in the world. I was worried, would I ever get married? And beyond that, I really doubted I would ever have kids. I just didn't think it was in the cards for me for the longest time. And the reason I tell you that is because I think coming from that perspective caused me to appreciate the parenting experience in ways I wouldn't have. Because I didn't expect, it wasn't like, I didn't assume this was going to be part of my life. So when I got it, like it meant something different. I mean, I know that everyone enjoys parenting and appreciates it. But for me, it felt like a specific and special blessing. Parenting is just weird. You hear all the horror stories and people bemoaning the long nights and all the things the kids can do and get in trouble. But in a way, you almost enjoy doing everything for and with them in those earliest years. You know what I mean? Like, I used to be so awkward with kids. And someone asked me what surprised me the most about being a parent. And my honest answer was that it came so much more naturally than I expected. For real. And that may not be the case for everyone, but it just was for me. In a weird way, you appreciate the crying because you know they're healthy and have strong lungs. In a weird way, you appreciate laying on the floor all night next to the crib because you know if you get up and try to leave, they'll wake up and cry all night. You appreciate that you put carpet in that room. You appreciate all these little things that you never thought, you always thought were going to be burdens. And there's this weird sense of, I get to do this. I get to experience being a dad. And it's strange what it does to your mind. Macon is 5 and a half, and he still wakes me up in the middle of the night to ask me to cover him back up in his blanket. Because he got up and went to the bathroom and needed someone to put the blanket over him. And part of me will, in fact, complain to him, son, you don't need to wake me up to do that. You can learn to do it on your own. But there's this other part of me that does it anyway, because I know that very soon he won't ask me anymore. Is that not the strangest thing on the planet? There is something about when you don't assume you're going to get an experience, that you appreciate that experience in ways you wouldn't have if you just assumed it was going to be part of your life. For me, I had that experience in parenting. For you, it may have been something else, but it was just my experience. And the reason I tell this is because I think that life, in all of its difficulties and in all of its hardness, if you will, all the absurd things that happen to you, there's a lot of life that is like that. You could complain and be annoyed by it. Rainy mornings and ridiculous traffic and spilled coffee in your car. But through the right lens, even that is something to be grateful for. Beautiful in its smallness. It's the unique experience of being alive because there's a God of the universe that allows you to live one more day. And all that ordinary and all that small and all that annoying is part of the blessing that when you get the right perspective becomes so much to be grateful for. That is the beautiful spirit that I think a Christian should inhabit. When gratitude and humility shake hands and create the follower of Jesus. Here's my application steps. I broke them down a little differently today. Discuss. This could be, you know, at lunch somewhere or later this evening. discuss, how do humility and gratitude go hand in hand? Which is more difficult? I don't know if that's a fair question because they're both hard. But do you personally struggle to be more grateful or struggle to be more humble? Likely they both need to happen. Number two, observe. Take time to look in your life and find the blessings that are present in ordinary and even mildly annoying moments. You get to do this. You get to be a parent. You get to drive a car to work. You get to have a job and income provided for you. You get to go to Christmas holidays that you have to drive stupidly long for and stay way longer than you wanted to. But you get to do it. Observe those blessings and remind yourself of it. And then last, pray. Pray, God, remind me what I deserve and what I do not. And because I acknowledge what I am owed in this life and what I am not owed, guide my thoughts to your goodness every day. And when you do that, you get to have a little bit of gratitude, and it changes everything. This is something we all need to work on, myself included, but I think it's something worth working on, because gratitude and humility tied together are, I think, the beginning point of a soul that can really be a benefit to the kingdom of God. If you will, bow your heads. God, thank you for loving us so much, for giving us this cool morning to come to church and sit through, you know, boring sermons and songs. But to be able to get to worship and honor and hear about you. Thank you that we're here. Thank you that we're alive. And please work in our hearts and our minds to appreciate that more. In your Son's name we pray. Amen.